We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Welcome back to another episode here of Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast, and the Indiana Pacers take down the Toronto Raptors 140-123. And here talking with me about this game, making her Setting the Pace debut from 8 points, 9 seconds, it's Maddie Chandler, getting off covering the NCAA Final Four. Maddie, how's it going?
It's going really well. I'm really tired from the weekend, but it was fun. It was a really good time.
I will ask you this because, you know, going from the Final Four, women's college basketball, you know, they outdid the men in viewership, and then watching the Pacers game against Toronto, how big of a drop-off was that for you tonight?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, the stakes are so high with the Final Four and the championship and everything, and you could say the stakes are very high with this Pacers game. But I don't think anyone told the Pacers that, at least in the first quarter. So we'll see.
Yeah. But, I mean, what a first quarter for the Pacers. I mean, they get down by 12 points. They end up getting outscored by 10 in the first quarter. And it feels like, great. Once again, this Indiana Pacers team is going to fall to a team that's eliminated from the playoffs. And it really just felt like they were sleepwalking. I think Tyrese Haliburton said that post game that they were just kind of sleepwalking through the first quarter. And I love what TJ McConnell told Jeremiah Johnson at the halftime. He said, you know, things started changing when we grew up. And it's really sad that, you know, I've heard McConnell talk about this multiple different times since the game against Brooklyn. And the fact that, you know, he has to be the guy that says it in the huddle against Toronto with three games left. To me, it's not problematic, but it is a problem for this team that they still at game 80 are having issues taking care of business when they need to. I know they did it in the end, but like, they cannot get off to another slow start like that. I mean, they only have one more game probably against a team under 500 in Atlanta, but like they're still in a playoff. They're in a play-in team. So like, I don't know. I was just really disappointed with their start.
Yeah. And it is concerning that it's a pattern. I'm not really sure what to blame it on. I don't know if it's a youth thing, if they just, you know, they're basically still kids out there playing, you know, a playground game for money. But I think it is weird. He said something about maturity, and I feel like TJ is the ultimate pro, first off. He's a leader in the locker room, obviously. I mean, he came off the bench tonight and had like 17 points, I think, in his 21 minutes, which is absurd, just considering he wasn't even supposed to be in the rotation at the very beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I think Rick sat him down and was like, you know, your opportunities are going to be limited. But having that voice, I think, in the huddle has been huge. I'm not sure why it feels like there's nobody in that starting group that is able to do that the way that he's able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect Tyrese to kind of be that guy, but he is still relatively young, so I think that's going to take some time. But then you look at a guy like Miles, who I think Miles is relatively quiet, doesn't usually say a whole lot. Pascal Siakam, a guy that won a championship, you think he would also be in their ear. I think early on in the season, Bruce Brown was kind of that guy. So losing him, like trying to replace that, maybe TJ finally feels more comfortable in his role where he can say something a little bit more and have a little bit more weight with his voice. But, you know, I think the Pacers responded. I think once TJ McConnell came into the game, it did kind of change things. Obi Toppin came in the game. He really changed things. But the Pacers outscored the Raptors 115-88 the last three quarters. So they took care of business when they needed to. They turned things on. And then, you know, it is a four-quarter game. It's not just a one-quarter game. But it is one of those things where it's just like, man, how did they get off to this slow start? But I do want to look at the positives here because the Pacers clearly needed this game. Still, after beating Miami, a huge, huge win on Sunday and a very close one that they almost choked away, it was great to see them get this win in Toronto. Now, they have not won three games in a row since the All-Star break. So can they pull that off Friday night? You know, that's to be determined. But in Toronto, back against Pascal Siakam's former team, Pascal Siakam tonight, 16 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists. Last time they were there, Rick Carlisle called it Pascal Siakam night, baby. I don't think he's going to be saying the same thing tonight.
He was quiet tonight, and it was a different kind of quiet because he was always, I mean, he always showed up when they needed a bucket. He went and got one. But other than that, he was really, it was a quiet 16 points. And, you know, the only real flashy play came from Haliburton and Obi Toppin.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about Haliburton, obviously. One of his, if not his best game offensively since returning from the All-Star break. 30 points on 10 of 18 shooting. 5 assists, 5 rebounds, you know, a really nice game from him. I really felt like Tyrese was looking for a shot. It was going down early. But I feel like he could have still have been more aggressive, more assertive in that first quarter.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to chalk the first quarter up to just an off quarter. The other three quarters were very, I mean, they looked much more like the team we've been watching all season. Tyrese especially, he was, you know, he was very passive in the first quarter. The ball really wasn't moving that well in the first quarter. It was sticking a lot. They were doing a lot of strange things that they don't usually do. I mean, a couple times they passed it. I mean, they pass it to each other and the other guy wouldn't be ready for the ball or stuff like that, dribbling off their feet. It was just, they felt disjointed. And I think a lot of that contributes to what we saw in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Tyrese Haliburton, though, I mean, he did have a nice bounce back game. Obviously, it was good to see him play so well offensively. I know there was people not impressed with what he did against Miami offensively, but still, 30 points plus 15 for the game. Had 2 steals, had a block, and let's just talk about this block because we got the first smothered chicken, and I don't know how long from Quinn Buckner. So, what were your thoughts? I mean, are you a fan of the smothered chicken?
I'm a fan of the call. I don't know if I'm a fan of it for this block, but I think that it works going off of Tyrese is the one that asked him about it, if he was going to bring it back for the playoffs. And then he brought it back early just for a Tyrese block. So I was a fan of that.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to take any credit here, but I did ask Quinn Buckner on Sunday. It was me, Derek Kramer, and Jimmy Cook. We were all sitting behind the Bally Sports broadcast table before the game. And Quinn walked by and I said, QB, I got to ask. You know, fans are wanting to know, where is this mother chicken call? He smiled real big and said, thanks for asking. So I tweeted about it because I wanted to make sure that all the fans knew that, you know, that follow me or that see my stuff knew that I asked, you know, trying to do them a solid since I have that relationship where I feel like I can ask QB. And then Tyrese basically went out and said, I saw the fans on Twitter talking about it. So, you know, it wasn't like I'm taking credit for it. Some people have messaged me and said, thank you for putting it on Twitter because Tyrese saw it. But you know what? I think Tyrese definitely has more sway and getting QB to call it than I ever would. So I'm not going to take the credit away from Ty, but it wasn't the smothered. It was a weak smother. It might be the weakest smothered chicken we have ever seen Quinn Buckner give out.
Very lightly smothered chicken, but.
But anytime Tyrese Halliburton blocks a jump shot, it is impressive because that's not, I mean, I talked about it against the Heat. Like, he had two blocks on Jimmy Butler in that game. So it's one thing that you're seeing a little bit more of Tyrese using his size and his, you know, what is that, your wingspan to kind of get out there and block a shot. So it's one of those things where he can kind of make up for his lack of defensive ability by blocking shots with that outstretched arm.
Yeah, I think that he definitely has the length to make plays like that, obviously. I mean, we see him jumping in the passing lanes and getting steals that way all the time. I feel like his length and his wingspan are aspects that he can kind of leverage to make himself, you know, not as much of a defensive liability, because he is, I mean, he's paper thin. He's a skinny guy. Like, he's going to get bodied up a lot. And if he's able to, you know, get his arms around guys and get stops that way, then that's definitely a positive in the Pacers' eyes.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Like, he's going to be targeted. You're just going to have to figure out ways to not make him as big of a target as he has been in previous, you know, months. I would say at the beginning of the year, like, Boston was really hunting him and he had no answer. So I think that going to a more defensive-minded lineup with Nesmith and Nembhard in that starting five, it does kind of, you know, mask that hole there that they had defensively. But I'm going to let you kind of take direction here of this podcast. Where do you want to go next in terms of who we talk about?
Let's see. I feel like I was really impressed with TJ. We can talk about TJ all day, I feel like. Ben Shepherd, though, started out a little streaky shooting-wise, but he was everywhere. I mean, he was making all kinds of hustle plays, defensive plays.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Shepherd came in for Aaron Nesmith, right, because Aaron Nesmith was getting in foul trouble. I felt like this was a pretty forgettable game for Aaron Nesmith. Just a lot of bad decisions. I know there was one where he actually came into the second quarter. I clipped it and put it on Twitter. He comes into the game, and, you know, R.J. Barrett sets a screen on Ben Shepherd, and Jordan Moore gets a free look at the basket. Aaron Nesmith's head was turned. Wasn't even looking at the screen, at the guy cutting. And he lets a wide open layup happen. Rick Carlisle calls timeout after like a 2 second delay and just kind of looks at him like, what are you doing? And you could tell Nesmith was so defensive about what happened there. And it was just one of those games where Nesmith had some nice moments here and there in the game. I'm not going to say that he wasn't like overall like a little bit of a help, but he wasn't that solid in this game to me. It was one of those things where I enjoyed the lineups with Ben Shepherd on the floor in his spot with the starters, then I like Nesmith out there. And I think you're right. Ben Shepherd had some big time shots, that three in the corner that he hit really, really quick. Nembhard threw it to him with the shot clock expiring. I think Olynyk was in his face. So, you know, Ben Shepherd, he's a rookie that's still trying to figure things out. But aside from this game, like, what have you seen from Ben Shepherd that's been so impressive to you?
I think that he just has a really great basketball IQ, which seems like an easy answer, but he knows when to make the extra pass, and he knows, you know, where to cut. He knows where he can gamble a little bit on defense to try to get steals. He's just he's got the mental part of the game almost locked down, and he's just working on catching up to the pro game. And they talked about that a little bit on the TV broadcast, I think. I think Quinn was saying something about that. He knows how to play basketball. He's just acclimating to the pro game. And I feel like that's really encouraging to see, you know, from a rookie.
Yeah, and I would say one more thing just to add to that is, like, the speed of the game has, you know, not gotten too fast for him. I think there's times where you can see the speed of the game does kind of speed him up. He gets out of position, but he's been really consistent and kind of avoided doing that, which has been huge. So that's one thing I like about Ben Shepherd. And I will say there was a little bit of an interesting dynamic that took place tonight. Jalen Smith gets the backup center minutes to start out, but Rick Carlisle did not like what he was seeing from Jalen Smith. I think he might have missed a box out. So he put Isaiah Jackson into the game, and Isaiah Jackson ends up walking away with 18 minutes in this game. He had 7 rebounds, just 4 points, but he only shot the ball 3 times, so he was 2 of 3. I mean, Isaiah Jackson is one of these players that a lot of people on social media say that maybe he should get more minutes than Jalen Smith at times. And he's a much better shot blocker, clearly doesn't have the same floor spacing that Jalen Smith does have, but I thought he was really terrific in this game. And I think the way that you're seeing Obi Toppin and Ben Shepherd shoot the ball so well, maybe you don't need the 3-point shooting from Jalen Smith as much as maybe you thought you did prior to who they had out there before.
Well, and another thing with Isaiah Jackson is he had 7 rebounds and 5 of them were offensive, which is huge if you've got 4 other shooters on the floor. I mean, the best looks from 3 come off of an offensive rebound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. Isaiah just seems to be a very a lively player around the basket. Are you on one side or the other in terms of who you'd rather see play the backup center minutes?
I think that they both offer different looks. I think that sometimes Isaiah can be a liability if he can't stretch the floor, because that's where you run into teams putting, if he's out there, you know, with 4 other shooters, then you can have a team play a bigger 5-man that's not he can kind of stay home around the rim is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So the paint gets clogged up a little bit, whereas if you have 5 players that can shoot the ball, then it opens things up a little bit for guys that can cut and slash and, you know, kind of do some work inside the arc. But Jalen Smith, I mean, is he really a reliable floor spacer right now? I'm not sure what he's shooting from 3 this year, but it seems like it's not as good as, you know, as we were hoping or as what he has.
Well, he shot the ball really well early on in the season. I think that was like really helping him out quite a bit. Right now he is a 41.7% 3-point shooter on the season. So that is pretty great, but I do think that his numbers are quite down since the All-Star break. I don't have those stats up right now, but you know, they have dipped quite a bit. And I think part of that is in large part to that injury. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's a nice luxury to have, right, with Isaiah Jackson as the backup, you know, the third string center with this team. But I will say one thing that I think Carlisle wants Isaiah to get better at is his unnecessary fouls. He had 0 fouls in this game, but there was, I forget what game it was. It might've been against the Heat. I can't remember, but he subbed into the game. Might've been the Nets the other night, but he subbed into the game and he got like 3 fouls in like 5 minutes. And it was just like, okay, like, what are we doing? Like, just careless stuff. Like, he like missed a shot on offense, and then like the other team gets the rebound and he's like hacking at the ball trying to get it because he's mad he missed an easy put back. It's like, sometimes you have to learn how to just move off of a play and move on to the next one. Let's go ahead and take a quick break and talk about Unified Healing. You know, whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of Setting the Pace. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement Systems, or simpler, EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in Indiana or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/pace to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/pace, P-A-C-E. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Now, let's get back to the show.
And he's had that problem his whole career. He's in his third season, though, and he's like freshly 22 years old, which I think is a lot of the allure with Isaiah Jackson is he's so athletic and he can make those, you know, flashy plays. He can get 5 offensive rebounds and help your team out, but with the added liability of he may foul more than you'd like to see. But you know, maybe part of that is just a growth thing, and maybe that comes with maturity and age.
Yeah, I was.
But does he have time to do that on the Pacers? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty hard on him at the beginning of the season. I was kind of like, I'm just not seeing it. I think his preseason really underwhelmed me with just how bad he was in preseason. And I felt like Jalen Smith really won that position over him. And it was kind of interesting because Jalen Smith talked about how him and Isaiah were the 4 and the 5 as the backups in preseason, but didn't really play out that way when everything came to fruition, because I don't think Rick Carlisle loved what he saw from Isaiah Jackson, just felt like he couldn't trust him. And then you bring up a good point, 21 years old. It's one of those things where you always forget that he's still so young, so raw, still developing into the player that he's going to become. So, you know, I think we're seeing probably like Miles Turner at his best that he's ever been at the last couple of years, and he's 27, 28. So it does kind of show you like, okay, maybe in 5, 6 years, you know, Isaiah Jackson could be something much, much better than he already is. Maybe he could develop that outside shot. Maybe he could become a better passer, things like that. But it just feels like at this moment, he's kind of just having to take advantage of opportunities when they come and just be ready at all times. And I don't have a problem with that. I think guys need to earn it more than just be given that. And that's kind of why something we talked about at the game with Jairus Walker not playing as much. And I actually gave you a shout on the pod because I want to take your point. But I thought it was a very good point that had the drafts been, you know, reversed, where Jairus was drafted the year that Mathurin was and Mathurin was drafted the year Jairus was, maybe Jairus is more solidly in the rotation where Mathurin's kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing about a team that's, you know, kind of, I don't know that they necessarily went through a full rebuild. I think this was definitely still a retool, especially because that Halliburton trade was such a brilliant move for both franchises. But
oh, don't be nice. Say what you really mean.
A very good player. but I think that's kind of what you run into now, is it's only taken a couple of years. So you have some very young players, but you're also seeing some fast success. And both, I mean, I'm sure that there are a lot of fans that are going to disagree with me, but Ben Mathurin still feels very raw. He's, yeah. I mean, offensively, he's a good scorer, but that's about it. And he has to develop, he's going to have to develop, you know, his defensive play, his, you know, the way he reads screens and the way that he's, you know, operating with the ball in his hands and making a decision as far as, you know, should I shoot in this empty space or is there somebody that's more open? And I think that Jairus being drafted the year that he was, I think that there's too many guys that are, well, not too many, but there's enough guys that are, you know, on a similar kind of development level as he is. And they're all kind of competing for minutes and for attention and practice and that kind of thing. So I feel like, you know, within a few years, they probably just need to stick with these guys and really, you know, pour into them and develop them. And within a few years, you're going to see what you can get out of them. But I feel like that's where they're at right now, just developmentally. They're having fast success. And then it kind of brings up the question of like, oh, is this player good enough? When really, I mean, they haven't even had a chance.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's a great point because I think, you know, Dustin Dopierak talked about this on our podcast last week. Just Rick doesn't want to put Jairus out there in a tough spot right now when all these games are must win. And if he has a bad game, just people kind of throwing him under the bus real quick, like fans, because, you know, fans are real wishy-washy. Like, everybody wants to see Jairus, but the moment he's not playing, or the moment he's playing and he's playing bad, it's going to be like, why are we playing this guy? And I do agree with your Ben Mathurin take, because I really do like Ben Mathurin. I think that there is a lot of potential there, and he could really be maybe a number two, number three kind of player on a championship level team, but he's got a long way to go until he gets there. And I think with that injury, you maybe thought there might be more of a drop off there with this team. And it really feels like it's not been that, like, you haven't felt the drop off as much as maybe you thought you would. And I think a lot of credit has to go to TJ McConnell and Obi Toppin playing out of their mind this month of April, really, to kind of make you feel like it's softened the blow a little bit. But at the same time, it's one of those things where Mathurin is such a gifted scorer. Like, you might miss that in the playoffs a little bit more than you do in the regular season. But I think so far in the regular season, the veterans on the bench and the guys that have had a little bit more experience have been able to kind of mask that loss of Mathurin. And to me, that's not a bad thing. It just kind of shows you where Mathurin is at in his developmental stage, while people are ready for him to, like, be a starter and be the next, you know, guy with Ty and Siakam. He just isn't there yet. And I want to see him get there for sure, but it's too inconsistent on the defensive side of things. And then, like you mentioned, the passing, the playmaking, things like that. Like, he's a great scorer, but other than that, there's a lot of rawness to his offensive game.
Yeah. And it helps always to take a step back and just gain, you know, some perspective of these guys are so young still. And the Pacers are deep. I mean, they've been deep all season. That's the whole reason why they were able to go out and get Pascal Siakam, but that, and he was expiring, but but I just think, you know, there's other guys to fill in that kind of that production hole that you see. But, you know, with another year of experience and with another offseason, you know, with fingers crossed, some postseason experience, it'll kind of put some maturity into the older guys. I say older, like the 24-year-olds. Yeah. But I think it'll help out with, you know, seeing just, you know, in the postseason, this is the level that we have to be at every night, and kind of raising the intensity of everything else around that to this is how we're going to practice in order to be ready for that. And that's going to help a lot of, you know, the Jarises, the Ben Matherins, the Ben Shepherds develop.
Yeah. And I was kind of curious too, because you talk about that depth. There is a lot of depth on this team. And I was thinking about it today, like, and I know this is just like a podcast for me, thinking of like offseason topics and things we're going to look at, obviously, like once the playoffs are over and things like that. But it's like, you know, people have been asking a lot, like, can you bring Obi Toppin back? It's like, how much is it going to cost? How important is he to this team moving forward? Because he's been so good the last couple of weeks. You got Jairus Walker, you want to get more playing time to. You just re-signed Nesmith. You got Nimhard, who's still in the third year of his rookie contract. Same with Matherin recovering from the injury. What's that do to Shepherd's minutes? You know, it's just like there is not enough, you know, roster spots or spots in the rotation where you can feel like you can play everybody you want to play a fair amount of minutes. So even if you let McDermott go and you let Jalen Smith go, like still there's 11 guys that you're trying to cram into a 9 to 10 man rotation, which is just, it's going to be problematic. I don't really envy the Pacers with the spot they're in, because they've done a good job of accumulating talent and putting it together. And now it's just a matter of how do we consolidate this to get, you know, the right player to help us take that next step. But I do want to stay on Obi Toppin, because you talked about him a little bit early on, but 10 of 14 in this game, 3 of 7 from three. So the only four misses that he took or that he had tonight were from long distance. He had 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 23 points. He was dunking everything, dunking on Kelly Olynyk, just putting on a show tonight. And it's just amazing to me to see how much Obi Toppin has grown this season with the Pacers, from what he was with New York to where he is now. I feel like, and I tweeted this, so I'm curious your thoughts. I feel like he can be the X factor in a playoff series.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think he absolutely can. I mean, I'm thinking about how I feel about them bringing him back now, but
Let's talk about it right now.
I haven't looked at, I don't think they have his bird rights, do they? Well, no, they do.
He's a restricted free agent.
Okay, they do. Okay. Yeah. It gets difficult there. It's one of those things where you almost, you don't want to lose him for nothing, but it seems like you may want to consolidate your assets a little bit and commit to your own guys, the guys that you've drafted, like Jairus Walker. Mm-hmm. While it makes them kind of like the Buddy Hield trade, it makes them worse in the short term. Maybe they'd be better off in the long term. And I think that team building is absolutely a long-term concept. Let me throw this at you real quick, because
there's been talks about Jairus Walker being more of a three than he is a four. Chad Buchanan came on our podcast, said that, and I forget who else talked about that too, but they've played him more at three this year than I think they have at four. And so if you feel like Jairus can be a three, then maybe there is a little bit more room for Obi Toppin at the four, right?
I love Jairus at the three. I feel like that's an incredible move. I've liked that idea since he was drafted. But
All right. Talk to me more about that. Why do you like him so much?
I like the size that he has at the three and the switchability. I mean, he's got the, he has the potential to be an awesome, awesome defender. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what, like he can, you know, round out his offensive game and be serviceable on that end. But mm-hmm. he has potential to be an incredible defender, and they could really use someone in, like in the three spot that has that kind of potential.
Yeah.
So, you know, Aaron Nesmith is more of a 2-3 that I feel like he's more of a 2 than a 3. Mm-hmm. And if you have hard-nosed guys like that, I think that that could change an entire team too.
Yeah. My thought process is if you can, you got Aaron Nesmith locked up for what? It was at 3 years for $33 million, something like that.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
If maybe by the last year of Aaron Nesmith's contract, that's when Jairus Walker is officially your starting three. Give him 2 more years to kind of develop in that spot, maybe get some minutes with the starters here and there next season, because I think they're going to try to find a way to make sure he gets on the court more next year, just because there's too much talent there to just be letting it rot on the bench. And I'm not saying it's rotting, but it's not really being showcased. I mean, we've had some G League moments from him, and he's had some moments even in the regular season, like against the Clippers. It was a really good game. So I'm kind of curious to see what they do with him. And I think that they can bring Obi back. I think there's a spot for that. We'll obviously do a much bigger deep dive on this in the offseason, but like, I just feel like Obi Toppin, like the way he has shot the ball so well, his ability to be so athletic and get to the rim and finish with like that kind of authority, like they don't have anybody else that can really do that, in my opinion. So they kind of need someone like that, a little bit bouncy. I know Isaiah Jackson can jump out of the gym, but he's not putting the ball on the floor or shooting threes like that. So it's one of those things where I feel like where are they going to make the cuts at? And that's where it's going to be very tricky. And I feel like there's too many important players on this team to really make those cuts. And I hate to say it, but the thought of, you know, selling high on TJ McConnell did cross my mind today because he's playing so well. Maybe this is the time to trade him in the offseason because he is going to be 32 years old. I'm not saying I want to do it, but if that's someone they feel like they need to move off of to get the rotation figured out a little bit more, maybe that's what they do. But I feel like he's almost untradeable with the way he's been playing this point. So a lot of question marks for the front office. We'll get into all that, like I said, later. But to wrap up this game, anything else that you want to bring up in terms of like just like team stats, thing that's anything that stood out to you in this game? I'm just curious.
Yeah, the Doug McDermott experience has been interesting, to say the least.
Has it really been?
I have not enjoyed it. I don't know if anyone else has. I mean, it's nice. He's a former Pacer and he's back, whatever.
Yeah.
He plays 10 minutes tonight. He makes 1-3. He's 1-for-4 from three. He fouls. I think it was a shooting foul, so he gives up free throws, and then he like disappears to the bench for the rest of the game. And it just didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. He was the first sub in the game tonight, which was really bizarre after not playing a single minute against the Heat in what was considered a you know, playoff-like game. The Pacers shortened their rotation to nine men, and they said, okay, Doug, you're not playing in this game. We actually need defense. So I don't understand why he was the first sub in. I thought it would be McConnell. I thought it would be Toppin. I thought it might even be Ben Shepherd. But no, here comes Doug McDermott to the scorer's table, and I'm thinking, Rick, this is a very interesting decision. Like, maybe he felt bad about not playing him in the Heat game, so he was trying to get him a little bit of extra run here. But I don't know if you heard what Doug McDermott said on Ryan Russillo's podcast when he had him on, but Ryan Russillo was talking to him, and Doug McDermott said, yeah, when I was talking to Coach Pop, we came in, he walked in the gym, and he said, I don't need to meet with you. He said, you know, you're probably one of the worst defenders I've ever seen in my life, but you have a great three-point shot, so I'll see you in September.
Which is just, it's what makes him even more baffling that he's the first guy off the bench tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, would the Raptors start out on was it an 11-2 run, I think, to open the game?
13-2 run.
13-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To Javon Freeman Liberty, who's career average is like 6 points.
Yeah, I mean, he was averaging 6-3-1, and he had, I believe it was like 20-4 at the end of the first quarter. I don't know what he finished with. Maybe he didn't have 20, but maybe it was close to that. I think it was 14-4.
He had 14. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had 20-8 in this game with one assist. 7-10 from the field. Like, he was literally obliterating the Pacers defense in that first quarter. And I thought to myself, what are we doing? Why are we making, like, two-way guys look like all-stars? Like, it was embarrassing. Like, I don't want to go back to that. I'm trying to forget the first quarter because it was so bad. But, like, we do have to give Freeman Liberty a lot of credit because, you know, he put his name on the map out there tonight. And I think a lot of Pacers fans will remember him because of this performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what that's what the end of the season is about for teams like the Raptors that are not going to make the playoffs. I mean, guys like that, absolutely. See what you've got. And some of them show flashes, and he just happens to be one of them. So I feel like we do have to acknowledge that. But no, the Doug McDermott decision was, I didn't understand it, but I'm not a Hall of Fame head coach. So
yeah, I mean, the only thing I even like remotely said about the coaching was, two things. I felt like he should have benched the starters in the first quarter by the way they were playing. Just put a whole new five-man lineup out there. I think that would have been the wake-up call that that group probably needed. But once you, like, again, he is a Hall of Fame coach. Like, he probably knows his players and how they would respond to that better than I do from my couch. So I'm not going to sit here and click on what I'm doing. But thought that was interesting. And then I thought what Quinn Buckner said about how he was pleading with them at practice in the walkthrough about, you know, starting the game out strong. And I got some pushback from this from fans saying, like, no, it's normal for a coach to kind of remind his players to play hard. I'm like, okay, I'm not saying remind. There's a difference between remind and plead. So it's been problematic for this team all season long. The fact that everything is at stake here in terms of, like, seeding position and trying to avoid the play-in, the fact that you have to come into your practice and tell your starting five or your group, we got to get off to a strong start. We can't sleep on the Raptors. Like, to me, that seems a little bit problematic. And I don't like saying that, but it's like, at what point do these guys grow up? And we've talked about this at the beginning, but, like, the fact that Buckner brought that up, I thought was a very interesting point.
I did too. That was a red flag, I guess, for me when I heard that. Because it's one thing for, like, a high school coach or maybe even an AAU coach to plead with his players to start out strong and to not take, you know, not sleep on the other team. Mm-hmm. But this is the NBA. This is, like, even more than that, these last three games were super important for the Pacers and seeding and everything. And for him to have to beg them to come out strong and with energy, that's a little bit alarming.
Mm.
I wrote down effort because, you know, you're a professional and your head coach shouldn't have to beg you for effort at this point.
That seems pretty basic, right? Like, it doesn't seem like that's a hot take, right?
I don't think it is, but
yeah, I mean, it's game 80. What point do you need to be told that this is, like, all about effort, especially for a team that is really unproven? Like, I would get it if it was a veteran team that they've won a lot and it's like they had a letdown because they just overlooked the team. But, like, I'm not trying to be harping on Tyrese Haliburton, but, like, if you're the leader of this team, you've talked about never even having a winning season until this year, and you're overlooking teams and sleepwalking, like, don't get too cool for school. Like, he needs someone to chew him out a little bit and maybe kind of embarrass him, humble him a little bit. I don't know. I mean, the Damian Lillard, you know, your time will come. You will be humbled, whatever he said after the in-season tournament game. But, like, you know, he went through a rough stretch there with stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of this falls on his shoulders because he is the proclaimed leader of the franchise. And he really wasn't even looking for a shot. It was like the Nimhard was running the offense and they just really didn't get the ball moving. It was just a weird dynamic for me in terms of, like, how they've gone about approaching first quarters. But if they want to have playoff success, they're going to need Tyrese Haliburton to be what he was really, you know, the final 6 minutes of that first quarter and on from start to finish. There's no way that he can only play, you know, 85% of the game and play well. They need him to play 100% at his best level to have any success.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and it's hard because, like, everybody has an off night and sometimes you just need that little jolt of, oh, hey, we're not playing very well. Yeah. We need to grow up.
For sure.
To come out and maybe, you know, do what he did for the other 85% of the game. But you're right. It's a different level of basketball in the postseason and this team hasn't experienced that. So,
yeah.
I guess it just depends.
That's my only thing. It's like, you haven't been there yet, so don't get ahead of yourself, you know, and enjoy the ride, but keep fighting hard. Like, you still have a lot to play for, because the Orlando Magic lost to the Houston Rockets tonight. The New York Knicks ended up winning. The Milwaukee Bucks won. Philadelphia 76ers won. And I think Miami, did they lose? They beat out the Heat in double overtime. Or excuse me, they beat out the Hawks in double overtime. So that is a very interesting game there, that went to double overtime, kind of similar to when Philly beat San Antonio the other night in double overtime. So Indiana still has a game lead over Philadelphia. And I think the big thing here is now Orlando, Cleveland, Indiana all 4-5-6 with 46 wins. You know, New York kind of controls their own destiny now. But if Indiana beats Cleveland, they can jump into that 4-5. Maybe they get a 4-5 matchup with Orlando, which I think would be very interesting for them. So is there a playoff matchup that you're, you know, interested in and in kind of seeing for the Pacers? Is there a team that you would prefer to play?
I think that a series with the Bucks would be high drama.
Yes.
I don't know that I necessarily want that.
Yeah.
But I think that that would be fun, just, you know, for all of the extracurriculars that happened and their other games this season. But maybe the Cavs. I mean, they've been kind of middling these last few weeks. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting. Honestly, I don't know that I want to play the Magic, just because the Pacers struggle against teams with a lot of length and size. You know, just like the old Toronto Raptors when they had Siakam and OG.
Yeah.
Haliburton struggled. And I don't know if that's because the length clogs up passing lanes and he, you know, has a harder time being himself. But it feels like they've struggled against teams that have length and can play defense like that.
And I do think that with the Magic, one thing I haven't really thought about is, will the Pacers overlook this team, right? Basically feel like we're better than them, you know, and we should win this series. I think the Pacers would probably be favored in that series by a lot of people, just because I think that they would have the experience with coaching. I think Haliburton's the best point guard in the series. I think you can maybe say Banchero is the best player in the series at this point. Maybe Siakam. I don't know. I think that's kind of, you know, apples to oranges, right? Like, it's whatever you prefer. I think it'd be a fun series. The reason I like it is because both teams are inexperienced. I'm not really afraid of Cleveland. I don't want to play Milwaukee, because that means we'd fall probably to the 7th seed, unless for some reason Milwaukee falls to the 3 and New York moves up to 2, which is still possible. But, you know, I think there's still a lot to be left to play here this week, and so we'll kind of see what happens. But other than that, I don't really have anything else on the game. Is there anything else you wanted to give me, Pacers hot takes, while I have you here?
I don't think so. Not right now.
Okay. Well, speaking of hot takes, me and Maddie decided, you know what? Everybody knows I love doing drafts and just different types of drafts and things like that. So I asked Maddie, you know, you have any topics you want to do? And she said, well, not really. What do you have? And so I said, well, what about a Taco Bell draft? And she said, I love me some Taco Bell. So I appreciate the respect for Taco Bell. I've actually asked a few other people about doing a Taco Bell draft, and they're like, I don't really mess with Taco Bell. And I'm like, how do you not mess with Taco Bell? Taco Bell's good.
I love Taco Bell.
Yeah, so I was like, thank God Maddie likes Taco Bell. So we're going to do a snake draft, drafting our top five, which will also be AKA our Crave box, if you guys know what that is, the $5 box, which is a very good bang for your buck type thing at Taco Bell if you want that. But Maddie, I'm going to let you have the honors here of picking. Do you want the first pick in the draft, or do you want picks 2 and 3 in the snake draft?
I'll take picks 2 and 3.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that, because I have one pick that I think is, I don't know if it's a hot take or anything like that, but it is my go-to item at Taco Bell, and I usually get it every single time. So for me, the number one pick in the draft for the Taco Bell draft is the cheesy Gordita Crunch.
That was number two on my big board.
Okay.
Hurts a little bit.
My buddy David, that was just on this podcast Sunday, has never had a cheesy Gordita Crunch, and I need to change that. I don't know how you'd go to Taco Bell and not at least try that at one time.
It's delicious. The Doritos one is even better.
Yes. See, I'm iffy on that. It depends on my mood. But, I mean, are you allowed to draft that still?
No, I feel like it's the same item.
Yes, okay. I agree, but I didn't want to be that guy. I'd be like, well, you can't have my item. So, well, you've got the next two picks. I'm curious what you got.
All right, my next two picks. So for the second pick, I'm going to take the Breakfast Crunchwrap.
Okay, Breakfast Crunchwrap. That is pretty good. I've had it before.
It is. It's really solid. And then...
What's all in that, by the way?
It's like a hash brown, sausage, egg, cheese, and then their jalapeno sauce.
Okay, can you put bacon on that instead of sausage?
Yeah, I think you can, yeah.
Okay, I think I've had the bacon one over the sausage one. Usually more of a bacon guy than a sausage guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think you can probably even get both, which is why we love Taco Bell.
Wow. Meat lovers, breakfast, Crunchwrap. Okay, we're getting crazy here. All right, so your next
pick. All right, and then third pick, I'm going to take the relatively new Cantina Chicken Taco.
Okay, okay. That's got a good flavor to it.
Yeah.
And we are going off the menu as it is right now. So So you said Cantina Chicken Taco?
Yeah.
All righty. So I have to ask this. Because you took the Breakfast Crunchwrap, can I take the Crunchwrap Supreme?
Yeah, I think those are different.
Okay.
The Gordita Crunch has two variations, but the Crunchwrap, a Breakfast Crunchwrap is not the same as a regular Crunchwrap.
Okay, I do like a good Crunchwrap, so I'm going to go with the Crunchwrap Supreme. And then I'm also going to go, what's your preferred meat at Taco Bell if you are going, like, do you like the ground beef, the chicken, the steak?
I like the steak.
Okay, I would say ground beef is what I usually go to when I go there. I know it's a little greasy, but I do like it. So for my third pick, I'm going with the Chalupa.
Okay.
Ground beef is my favorite chalupa, by the way.
That's fair. That's fair. See, I was thinking in terms of a quesadilla, I'd take the steak. For other things, it's debatable. I like the chicken for some other stuff.
Mm.
All right. So for my next pick, I'll stick with the quesadilla. I'll go steak quesadilla.
I thought about that for my last pick. It was between quesadilla, the chicken quesadilla for me. And the chalupa, but I feel like I get the chalupa more.
All right, steak quesadilla, and then...
Steak for you. All right, I'm writing that down.
Let's see. I'm between two.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to go with the grilled cheese burrito.
Grilled cheese burrito.
Which is so messy to eat, but so worth it.
It is very greasy. A little slimy in your hands, but just don't think about it when you're eating it.
Yeah, just think about how amazing all that cheese tastes.
For sure. So I don't necessarily like it this much. I don't ever get it. The Mexican pizza, I know it's a very popular item.
I don't know that I've ever had it.
I've tried it. It's okay. I'm not going to pick it, but I do want to give it an honorable mention here. Like I thought about picking it, so I'm not going to go with it. To me, I think that you have to almost just go with a basic soft taco. I know that sounds so basic, but like who doesn't like a ground beef soft taco with some fire or hot or verde or mild sauce? So I'm going to go with a soft taco for my fourth pick. And then my last one, it is a staple at Taco Bell, and that is the cinnamon twist.
That's it. Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a solid pick.
You right, want to do six man or not? I will let that be an option if you want to do the six man.
Yes, let's do it because I've got two left and I can't pick between them.
Okay, then give me your next one.
All right, my fifth and final one is the Doritos Locos Taco.
Okay.
Which you could argue is the same thing as a soft taco, but it's that it's not.
It's a crunchy taco. It's not the same. Are you doing nacho cheese? Do they have a Cool Ranch one?
I don't know. I wouldn't get that if they did.
Nacho cheese is fire. I've had
nacho
it.
Nacho cheese has to, yeah, it's got to be cheese.
Okay. So your last pick is a big pick right here.
My last pick, my sixth man, are going to be the Cinnabon Delights.
Ooh, yes.
That
yes,
are
yes.
Part of the breakfast menu, but they are so good.
Yes, the 12-pack is too much, but the 2-pack is not enough. They need to change that.
Right, yeah.
Where's the 6-pack at? What are we doing, Taco Bell? Okay, so I could go a few different ways here. I really wish they had the Nachos Bel Grande still on their menu. They did bring something back similar to that. Do they actually? They still do have the Nachos Bel Grande on their menu. I'm looking at it right now.
I think they do.
I'm picking that. Yeah. Nachos Bel Grande. What am I doing? Cannot believe that fell all the way to me. How did I know that was on there? I'm mad at myself now. I thought it was just the new loaded beef nachos, but they have Nachos Bel Grande. So I'm picking that as my last pick. But the one I was debating between that was between the Nachos Bel Grande and Baja Blast from the fountain drink.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, you can't get Baja Blast anywhere else.
I think you've got more value out of the Nachos Bel Grande.
I do. I agree. That's why I took it. So just to recap, here is my Crave box. We've got the Cheesy Gordita Crunch, the Crunchwrap Supreme, the Beef Chalupa, Soft Taco, Cinnamon Twist, and Nachos Bel Grande. And Maddie, go ahead and tell everybody what you picked for your Crave box.
All right. I've got the Breakfast Crunchwrap, the Cantina Chicken Tacos, Steak Quesadilla, Grilled Cheese Burrito, Doritos Locos Taco, and the Cinnabon Delight.
Okay, so I would eat either of these. Obviously,
I would smash either of these.
That's the thing. Like 12 items, it feels like that's pretty good for Taco Bell. And this is not even including all the other stuff that used to be on the menu back in the day. I was looking at like a 1970s menu that had the Bell Burger, and I wish that we could have tried that. I mean, we're too young for that, but like the Bell Burger would have been awesome. Like, can you imagine ordering a burger from Taco Bell? Like, that just sounds so weird.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I don't know if I'd be that adventurous at Taco Bell.
Are you you're not an adventurous eater?
I mean, I eat Taco Bell, so I've got to be a little bit of an adventurous eater.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, outside of Taco Bell, like, what are some of your go-to restaurants in Indy?
Chick-fil-A, obviously.
Oh, okay. That's such a basic white girl thing to say. Come on now, what are we doing here?
Well, I'm a basic white girl, Chick-fil-A sauce. Just brown everything in Chick-fil-A sauce.
Yeah. No, I respect that.
Let's see, what else? Are we talking fast food?
Oh, just anything. Like, what's one place you like to go to? Like, get some food here in Indy.
Okay, sure. BJ's, Brewhouse, Pizookie's. Okay. I love those.
What was the last one?
It was Pizookie's from BJ's, Brewhouse.
Gotcha.
Basically, okay. Just a giant cookie. I don't know if you've ever had. They put ice cream on it. There's like a gazillion different flavors.
I don't think I've been there. I've been to BJ's at like once or twice. Mm-hmm. I usually go to the one in Greenwood. One at the Greenwood.
Yeah, get a Pizookie next time you go.
Pizookie. Okay, I'll have to try that. I think I actually have a gift card somehow. Someone gave me one because they didn't want it. So that's kind of bad when you're just giving away free gift cards to restaurants. Like, is that talk about how good they are? Like, I don't know. Like, I know a lot of people like Stone Creek. I don't really like that. It's fine.
It's okay. Yeah, overrated. It's just like, a little overpriced, I think. But
I mean, people were ripping to shreds my downtown, like local, like my places to go when I put that out for the All-Star Weekend. Like, I was just like throwing some ideas out there. So I was like, I'll just like a top 30 list so people can find some places. And I threw out some that I like, but like some that I knew were popular. People were like, this list sucks. And I'm like, man, you guys are dragging me through the mud. Okay, where's your list at? You know, so I'm not. I will eat about anything. Like, I'll try anything.
Yeah.
I'm not one that's like, oh, you know, got to go here. But I will say Rick's Boatyard. Have you been there before?
Mm-hmm. Rick's Boatyard is good. Very good.
That is a vibe. It's the weirdest place to be at. It's by Eagle Creek. And if you go in the summer, you almost feel like you're on vacation. You know what I mean? Like, you don't feel
absolutely
like you're in Indiana.
100%. It feels, yep. It has like spring break feel to it.
It definitely does. So, Maddie, this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, helping me out with this podcast, so it wasn't just me talking to people by myself. So a lot of good conversation here. You can't, you know, go wrong when you're talking Pacers and Taco Bell. I feel like that's two pretty great things in this world. So go ahead and let everybody know where they can find you at on social and plug anything you'd like to plug.
Sure. My Twitter, I guess it's X now, but I'm not calling it that. So my Twitter is at Maddie_Chandler, except my name is spelled MADIE, which is weird. But
let's talk about that. Why is it Maddie with one D?
So my full name is Madison, and so I shortened it down. It only has one D in it, so I figured when I shorten it down, why would I add another letter that's not there? Mm-hmm. Except for the E on the end.
Okay. Well, I will say this, my name is a little bit different too. So my real name is Jeffrey with a G. But my middle name is Alexander. So I go by Alex. It's a long story, but I'll just put it at that. That's what my mom preferred. So I've always been Alex. I've actually, like, there was two Alexes on my basketball team at one point when I was playing like township ball. And I was like, yeah, my real name is Jeff. You can just call me Jeff. And it never stuck. I don't feel like I look like a Jeff. I don't know why, but it's just weird that my real name is actually Jeffrey. So, I like the uniqueness of your name. And I will just say this, the worst part about my name growing up, my initials spell gag. So that's just like, thanks, mom. Thanks, dad. You know, could be a lot better, right?
Good.
So anyway, find you 8 points, 9 seconds, obviously, written work over there. I know you're going to continue doing some coverage for the Fever, right? Caitlin Clark, when she gets drafted next week.
I would love to. Yeah, I'll probably start following them a little bit more closely after watching her this weekend. But yeah, on my Twitter, I do a bunch of different things because I'm a journalism grad student, so I'll do several different sports over there as well. But it'll all be on my Twitter page.
Yeah, make sure you guys get over there because I know Maddie doesn't have a ton of followers yet, but maybe it's because you just guys thought there was two D's in her name. So MADI underscore Chandler, CHANDLER. Make sure you
It's actually,
guys
it's MADIE.
MA, what did I say?
MADI.
Oh, I meant the pet. That this is me late at night not following through with what I'm supposed to do.
This is what happens when you spell your name differently.
No, I did this like I messed up like this the other night. I just misspoke. It's MADIE underscore CHANDLER. Make sure you guys give Maddie a follow, especially if you enjoy this conversation. She stayed up late with me to do this pod, so I really appreciate it. But Maddie, we're gonna go ahead and sign off here. Thanks so much, and we'll see you in the field house on Sunday against the Hawks, right?
Yep.
All right, well, we'll be there, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Weed Hotchkiss from Pacers.com is going to be joining us. And then on Thursday, Chris Denari will be joining us. We had to reschedule from last week. So Chris Denari will be on, and it'll be a lot of fun. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't miss another episode of Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast. We'll be back tomorrow.